Good morning. We thank you for tuning into our radio program today. This program is brought to you each Sunday morning by the Parkway Church of Christ. We do appreciate your interest in spiritual things. We hope today to direct you to passages that will be helpful, profitable, thought-provoking. We do sometimes approach subjects that do require that we put some energy and thought into the topic, to reflect upon what we read, to make sure that we are accurate in our conclusions. So we hope that as well. Of course, as always, I want to remind you to take advantage of a Bible in this study, and check, if you have the opportunity to do so, check the references that we cite and make sure that we have handled God's Word accurately to fulfill on our end the responsibility of 2 Timothy chapter 2 and verse 15. On your end, to examine the things that we say to see whether or not they are so. Acts 17 and verse 11. Well, we are now, the big election is behind us. We're now looking back on the big presidential election, and it had several serious implications. I had talked last week about the importance of Christians voting in order to implement our ideals, in order to further our cause. For example, I think in terms of progressives, liberal political progressives, and their hopes and dreams for killing more babies, for opening abortion wider, to allow abortion to go farther and farther up to the edge of birth. And so, on the one hand, we can be happy that some of those intentions have been defeated. We should be thankful for that. Thankful for the fact that there are people who are conscientious and concerned about those things. Or we might talk about gender mutilation with this push for some psychotic reason that some people make in order to get as many little girls to be guys, to be boys, and to get as many little boys to be girls as they possibly can. Like, it's a major accomplishment for them. It's something that they just want in life, a dream of theirs, to try to get boys to be girls and girls to be boys. So we can look back on some of that. Well, you know, we think in terms of the extension of that, the application of it on transgenderism, of males, full-blown males being able to compete in female sports and just literally destroying female sports. So we've made some strides there with the results of this election, but I don't want to talk about those things today. I was interested in something else. There were many reasons that drove people to the polls and many reasons why Trump won the presidency back. But I want us to consider, focus on something that I got to thinking about that was rather interesting to me from a biblical perspective. Many people voted, many Hispanics, many blacks, particularly an additional percentage of young black men, many young people in general. The exit polling shows this to be a fact. Many young people in general voted more conservatively, voted for Trump because of inflation and the economy. And on the one hand, you might look at that. I know some people are pointing fingers and saying, well, those are just, you know, greedy people. They're not interested in idealistic things. They're just interested in the pocketbook. Someone made a comment about, you know, well, if you'd like to be able to, as a young person, to own a house before you're in your 50s, maybe we need something done about this. So I thought that was a good, obvious, common sense observation. So on the one hand, you have that approach where people are critical of it and they accuse you of being greedy or of being materialistic. Now, I've seen this some. But I think there is an absolutely other approach to this. There is another and a scripturally based approach to this that we need to consider. when it comes to that motivation. That is, some people just tired of inflation and tired of so much of their income just being their hard work, their labor, just being absolutely wasted in paying too much for basic things that traditionally have not been as expensive as they are now. Is that necessarily wrong to want to change on that? And I got thinking about what the Bible teaches about this. Certain basic, in fact, sometimes what we call basic rules that have to do with self-preservation, self-respect, self-value. You know, selfishness is wrong. The Bible condemns that. We are to be giving. We are to exercise love. Love is to characterize the child of God, which means we're going to be selfless, L-E-S-S, not selfish. We're going to be selfless. We're going to be giving. So selfishness is condemned. But what about the principle of self-preservation? I think the question is begged there that we need to consider in view of what the Bible teaches. In one of the most basic, most fundamental Bible passages, this point is made. And Jesus appeals to it in Matthew chapter 22. You know, Matthew 22, you have Jesus engaged in those debates and discussions with different sectarian groups. It was like a big debate that he had with these different people. And different one posed different questions, hoping to ensnare Jesus. It says, tempting him. They ask him these questions, tempting him. For example, Matthew 22 and verse 35. Now, this question came from a man called or described as a lawyer. Matthew 22, 35. He said, Master, which is the greatest commandment or great commandment in the law? Jesus said to him, You shall love the Lord your God with all of your heart, with all of your soul, with all of your mind. And then he said, this is the first and greatest commandment. The second is likened to it. Old King James here, Thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. You shall love your neighbor as what? As who? As yourself. Now, so we might ask the question, upon what basis are we able to love our neighbor? Well, a person with no sense of self-worth, self-value, self-respect, those go hand in hand, is not going to be concerned about others. He's not going to be concerned about his neighbor. And this is why it's so important that people work on their attitude when they realize they have an attitude problem towards others. What is your view of yourself? Are you self-loathing? Self-hating? Do you despise yourself? Do you see yourself as having absolutely no value? The Bible says that humans are made in the image of God. That is, our abilities, our capacities for doing and being a certain way or doing and thinking certain things. Those are all copied after the blueprint, the pattern that is God. We're made in the image of God. We know in Genesis 1 and verse 26 and 7 that cannot be referring to the physical qualities of man, because God is spirit. God is spirit, John 4:24. He has no physical being. So it couldn't have referred to that. So what is it referring to? Well, it's referring to the spiritual image of God. So Jesus said, You shall love your neighbor as yourself. On these two commandments hang all of the law and all of the prophets. In other words, those were powerful commandments. Love the Lord your God with all of your heart, with all of your soul, with all of your mind, and love your neighbor as yourself. So is it wrong for people to have a sense of self-preservation? It is not wrong. And when you think in terms of people voting for someone who might help those conditions, that might help them personally. It's not necessarily stingy or greedy or materialistic for a person to think that way. They may be thinking in terms of putting themselves in a better position to survive or to provide for their families or to be in a position to be able to help others when previously they just were in no position to do much of that, if any. Just barely surviving. And we hear story after story of people being in this situation. So you have Matthew chapter 22 and verse 39 to consider on that. And then there's a parallel to this over in the book of Ephesians. Paul is explaining to men why they should love their wives. He had commanded them to do it in Ephesians 5 and verse 25. Husbands, love your wives even as Christ also loved the church and gave himself for it. And then look at verse 28. He goes on to explain why he said what he did. So ought men to love their wives as their own bodies. Why didn't he just say that men should love their wives? He said men ought to love their wives as their own bodies. He said, he that loveth his wife loveth himself. For no man ever yet hated his own flesh, but nourisheth and cherisheth it, even as the Lord the church. He nourishes and cherishes what? Well, he's to do that. The teaching of the passage is that the man is to provide those concerns, those provisions, tender care, love, help for his wife. That's the teaching of it. But how did Paul teach it? He taught that no man ever yet hated his own flesh, but he nourishes and cherishes. As I said, the implication, the point and purpose of this observation was to show that men ought to love their own wives. But he said love their own wives just like they love themselves or their own bodies. Who is it often among men in relationships who mistreat their wives, who disrespect their wives? Well, often those who have no self-respect. They don't value human life. They don't value their own lives. They're not thinking ahead to what how they behave or how they may perceive themselves may affect other people. But friends, it does. It does. And the Bible teaches this. So when it comes to this question, and as I said, some have been critical of this, all those people, they just voted for themselves. They just voted for someone who would help them maybe make more money or be able to more easily pay their bills. Well, maybe they voted out of a sense of self-preservation. And the Bible teaches that there is absolutely nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with that. And I want you to consider this even further. There are several passages that came to my mind when I started mentally going down this path, and not necessarily to vindicate people that I don't even know, but though I do know some people who voted, had these reasons as their main reasons for voting. Inflation and economy. And so, as I said, it begs the question, is that necessarily wrong? Well, let's look at some verses on this. In Matthew chapter 7, Matthew 7 and verse 12, there's a verse that contains what we typically call the golden rule. You know, James 2 has a couple of verses there that talk about the royal law. The royal law. But over here in Matthew chapter 7 and verse 12, it's what we call the golden rule. I think that's a reasonable description of it. Certainly a rule, and it is golden when followed, when applied. Therefore, all things whatsoever you would that men should do to you, do ye even so to them, for this is the law and the prophets. That did not say, do to others before they have time to do it to you. It did not say do to others what they do to you. It said do to others as you would have them do to you. What is the basis of that rule, of that law? The individual self-protection, self-preservation, his own personal well-being, the basis, becomes the basis of how Jesus said, you ought to treat others. Here again we see the same principle, as we saw in Matthew 22:39 and Ephesians 5:29 with regard to the husband's attitude towards his wife. This is actually all through the Bible. And it has to do with the value of human life. It has to do with the sanctity of human life. It has to do with what God has intended for humans. And this idea of self-protection or self-preservation, even economic preservation, is right within itself. I've been talking leading up to the election, as I do a lot. I preach on these things when you have elections coming up. I have talked quite a bit about 1 Timothy chapter 2. 1 Timothy chapter 2, I want you to notice what Paul said is the purpose of praying for leaders. Praying for leaders. What are we hoping that leaders will do? You know, the book of Proverbs talks a lot about different types of kings, different types of civil leaders, and some of them are wicked and bad. And some of them appeal to the baser elements among people, and their rules are devastating upon the population. Talks about the people groaning when the wicked are in power. So you have passages like this. Then you have others that are the exact opposite, where you have rulers that rule on the basis of right principles, of the right treatment of others. For example, the Golden Rule. Matthew 7:12, and principles like that, honesty, fairness, equity in the application of law. So you have quite a contrast there in the book of Proverbs about the different types of leaders, leaders that rule in a way that make their subjects groan. Just that is, life just becomes miserable under those rulers, those types of rulers. Or rulers that rule in a way that provide an atmosphere of health, wealth, safety. You know, I should throw that in here. One of the things that pollsters found out when they did these exit polling polls, they found out that a lot of people were concerned about crime. Now, what are you thinking there? Well, you're concerned about your safety. You're concerned about the safety of your family members. You're concerned about the safety of other people, friends. And so, is there anything wrong with that? Well, let's see about that. In 1 Timothy chapter 2, in verse 2, Paul encouraged Christians to pray for kings and those who are in authority. He says, that we may lead a quiet and peaceful life in all godliness and honesty. Peaceful, the word translated, well, let's look at the first one. Lead a quiet and peaceful life. Quiet is a word that suggests tranquility arising from without. So in other words, you're praying for conditions, livable conditions, where you can be productive, you can do the things that God expects us to do, we can work with our hands the thing which is good. I think it's interesting, keep this verse in mind, I'm not finished with it, 1 Timothy chapter 2 there in verse 2, but it does remind me of a similar verse just a little earlier in your Bible, in 1 Thessalonians 4 and verse 11, where Paul says that you study to be quiet, to do your own business, to work with your hands, as we have commanded you, that you may walk honestly toward them that are without, that you may have lack of nothing. Or one translation says that you be dependent upon no one. Would it be nice to have a civil environment like that? a social environment like that, that you might lead a quiet tranquility arising from without, and peaceful life, tranquility arising from within, causing no disturbance to others. That's the teaching of this verse. Is it selfish or materialistic or wrong in any way for a person just to want that? To want a society in which criminals are punished, criminality is opposed, condemned, frowned upon by civil leaders? There's nothing wrong with that. So that our children will be able to be safe when they go to some event. They're away from us for a little while. They're doing something, you know. I tell people, I know I probably watch too much news, but it does make me informed on how people think. I've actually said before, you can also learn this sort of psychology, learning of human nature, by studying your Bible. And that's why I suppose maybe a lot of Bible students, a lot of preachers, wind up being somewhat therapists. They do. They learn a lot about human nature, because you learn about all of these different... God has given us a book in the Bible that describes so many different aspects of human nature. So many different responses, human responses in various circumstances. So you learn a lot about the way humans think, the way humans behave and act, what they will do in a certain situation, what they might be more inclined to do. And I think sometimes when I maybe am at a ballpark watching the grandkids play a sport, and it concerns me, it always concerns me when some of the younger ones will run off somewhere, maybe playing with some friends, and I always worry about those circumstances. And I realize that in most of these, and then in that environment, that it's by and large very safe, but in the back of my mind there's something there about the criminal mind and what could happen. So I'm a little paranoid about that. I admit it. And Paul says we need to consider these as realities, because, and we need to pray that we might have environments that are safe, but also productive. There's another passage on that one. So what about someone who voted and their chief concerns were crime? We saw that. Look at the exit polling. We can learn from this. Crime, inflation, and the economy. Now, for many of us, it had to do with moral issues like abortion and the promises that the progressives had made that they will loosen, that they will work through executive order or any other ways they could to loosen abortion, to allow abortion to be easier and to be less restricted. So I was opposed to that. And then you had this just push. Like I said, I just have to use the word, just almost a psychosis. Almost a psychosis, where people were just wanting more and more young girls, and I'm talking about 10, 11, 12-year-old girls, to be turned into boys, and little 10 to 12-year-old, 13-year-old boys to be turned into girls. And this by gender mutilation, surgery, hormones, and drugs, with irreversible effects. In other words, there have been many, many young people who have had these procedures and been on these drugs that have been now made sterile. They'll be infertile. They will never be able to have children. And they didn't realize what really the problem was when they went through these procedures, and now it's too late and their lives are damaged and destroyed. You know, I have to admit that one of the main reasons I voted as I did was because I wanted to try to head some of that off. I wanted the government to intervene and to protect people, for the protection of these types of people. And I also had concerns about the economy and inflation, but moral concerns were more to me. Criminality, illegals, and all of these types of things, those were concerns. So, and you may have had your reasons in a mix or match of different ones of those. But I want you to think about whether or not we're right to think that way. Well, we are. Because in Romans chapter 13, Paul talked about the purpose of civil government. Now, I often use this passage to point out that civil government is to punish those who do what is evil. And I have to emphasize that part a lot because, sadly, that's the part of it that is usually ignored. But there's another side to this that we don't typically emphasize. Romans 13:3. What did God ordain with regard to the role, the function of civil government? He said, rulers are not a terror to good works, but to the evil. Wilt thou then not be afraid of the power? Do that which is good, and thou shalt have praise of the same. Do what is good, and you will have praise. That is, you will be provided an atmosphere in which you will be able to function, be able to do what we just read in 1 Thessalonians 4, verse 11. And in 1 Timothy 2 and verse 2, lead a quiet and peaceful or peaceable life, tranquil and peaceful. That's a desirable thing. That's what most humans, I think, want. They want freedom. You know, many people, many of us, also had in mind infringements upon our First Amendment rights that we saw from 2020, 2021, 2022 because of COVID restrictions, where governors, like even our governor here in Kentucky, Governor Beshear, and the president, like President Biden, took away liberties, even religious liberties. It was pretty spooky. I was beginning to wonder what was going to be next. And it was a little concerning. What do we want? We want government. We want leaders, civil leaders, who will rule in such a way that we can lead godly lives in a peaceful, tranquil environment. That's what Paul said. We need to be able to teach others the next couple of verses in 1 Timothy chapter 2, which requires free speech, the ability to freely interact with others and speak to others. So when you just sort of evaluate these exit polls and you take a look at these things and the concerns that some people had, like I said, with growing criminality, with the refusal to enforce border laws, which has led to a lot of this terrible crime, rapes and murders. I just heard about another one last week. In fact, one last week, friends, I'm just going to go ahead and tell you this one. It is disturbing. A 26-year-old, it didn't matter that he could have been a legal person, legal citizen, or an illegal, but that I understand that that's irrelevant. This happened to be an illegal. Raped a 5-year, when I first heard this, I couldn't believe it. Raped a 5-year-old girl. And I'll just tell this audience that, you know, I told some people. I said, they probably don't want to turn his punishment over to me. I mean, when you think about someone raping a 5-year, the traumatic aspect of that, probably damage done there on many levels. And I just thought, that guy needs to be punished. And Romans chapter 13 and verse 4 talks about that. Punishment for crime. Is it wrong for people to vote in a way that reflects those concerns and feelings, those biblical principles? No. Nothing wrong with that. So I hate that some have been criticized, but those are some lessons that we can learn as we look back. We thank you for listening. Our time is up today. Hope you'll tune in for our study next week. Until then, we bid you a pleasant good day.